You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of Little Fish. Before we start, Andrew Hunter-Murray has something he'd like to say to you all, just to keep his inbox from bulging quite so much.
So this is a little... Thanks, James. Hi, everybody. This is a little pre-apology and correction. I run a small quiz in the middle of this show about the oldest ever James Bonds. I can't wait for you to hear it. It's really fun. And in it we say the two oldest James Bonds. I won't give away which ones now, but I'd just like to point out, I do know that Sean Connery was 53 when he was in Never Say Never Again, but it's not a canon Bond film. It's not one of the official ones, which is why it's not included in the quiz. I woke up sweating, realizing that I had not made this clear in the show itself. All will make sense soon.
Let it never be said that we don't take these silly little quizzes extremely seriously.
Extremely seriously. There's a quiz about carrots coming up that is honestly the most serious quiz I've ever run on this show. I'm so excited.
Too many spoilers, Andy.
Sorry, yes. If you would like to get more apologies, corrections, and bonus info, why not join Club Fish? This is our special secret members club. We do a fortnightly show called Drop Us a Line, where you get this kind of sizzling behind-the-scenes hot goss about the show itself. So if you want to join that, just go to patreon.com/nosuchthingasafish.
Next announcement before we start this week's show. If you heard our episode, which went out a few days ago, with none other than Michael Palin, then we got a little bit of an extra treat for you. We filmed the whole thing and we put it up on YouTube.
What?
Yeah, I'm sorry, James. Did you not know?
What? I was wearing my mankini the whole way through.
Yes, I know. It did. Michael did comment when you were out of the room. He said, "What a friendly young lady that is." yeah. So no, we filmed the whole thing. It's on YouTube. You can see us like worshiping Michael Palin in real time. It's great. It's great fun.
Just go onto YouTube and search for our names, or search for
No Such Thing as a Fish.
No Such Thing as a Fish, and I'm sure you'll find it.
But for now, enjoy this Little Fish. On with the podcast. Hello and welcome to Little Fish. This is our new weekly show where we read out your facts. We've had enough of our facts. Let's have some of yours. You've been sending them in to podcast@qi.com and they are terrific. And so we're going to share some of the absolute creme de la creme with you now. Who's got a fact? Who would like to kick off? Oh, like I'm here with Dan Schreiber and James Harkin.
Hey, Andy.
And my name's Andrew Hunter-Murray. Did I say all that?
I don't think I said that last week.
Well,
last week I was here with Andrew Hunter-Murray and Dan Schreiber.
Great.
And in case I forget to say it, next week I will be with Andrew Hunter-Murray and James Harkin.
Quit stalling, give us a fact.
All right, Gabe Bullard said, big fan of the show, I saw Dan post on Instagram that he found a book claiming to feature posthumous interviews with Elvis Presley's ghost. This is true. It's written by Hans Holzer, who is the person who sort of defined what a ghost hunter was and very much inspired Dan Aykroyd for Ghostbusters and so on. He's added a fact that has nothing to do with that. says, in the early 90s, when the United States Postal Service proposed issuing an Elvis Presley stamp, there was an effort to block it because someone must be dead in order to appear on a U.S. postage stamp. And Elvis, they said, was still alive.
That's wonderful. That's really good.
That's nice.
That is very funny. That is a thing, isn't it? You have to be dead in order to be on a stamp.
Definitely used to be the case.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it still is.
So Neil Armstrong landing on the moon was okay because you couldn't see his face. So it was a generic astronaut, even though it was...
such nonsense.
Yeah.
It's clearly just, we're proud we put someone on the moon, so we're going to break the stamp rule.
Yes.
That's what that is. Like, well, they were saying, oh, it's an astronaut rather than Neil Armstrong.
Yes.
Well, what's the astronaut's name?
Do you remember as well that that led to Buzz Aldrin's dad standing outside the White House with a placard that read, "My son stood on there too," and it was him being furious that
Michael Collins's mum was there saying, "Michael didn't actually stand on the moon, but he was
just in a car driving around the ring road of the White House."
Yeah, I think as well that one person in the UK did sneak onto a stamp accidentally who was still alive, and that's Roger Taylor
from Queen.
Because they did a Freddie Mercury stamp, but in the background, Taylor's drumming.
Oh.
And so technically they have put someone
But on. You are allowed the Queen on stamps.
Compulsory.
So a member of Queen feels fair as well.
Mm.
Brilliant.
There we go. Yeah.
Surely you're allowed. Are you not? Is the rule the same in the UK that you can't be on a stamp unless you're
dead? Again, I think it used to be. I'm not sure if it still is now, but definitely it used to be.
We've lost so many of our traditions.
Here is a fact. So this is from Chris Bemis. And Chris Bemis says, my fact is the largest shopping mall in the US, Mall of America, is kept warm in winter by human body heat.
Oh,
so is that the humans who are shopping in the mall, or is it a separate cadre of trained humans who just go around being hot?
Do you remember in the last episode we said that you have very high body heat and so your watch runs faster than most people's?
True. Yeah.
They keep a lot of people like you in the basement. No, this is just people who are shopping. And actually, like, I saw a Reddit on this. And they say that really the amount of heat that's given off by the human bodies is really, really negligible. And while it does say on the website that the mall has no central heating and that it uses the body heat, they're quite cagey with what they actually say. And probably all the individual stores have their own heating systems.
We also have a huge coal fire burning in the center. So we don't have central heating, but we...
So I think it's like it's definitely claimed by the mall. But whether it's 100% true, I'm not absolutely certain. And also they have all these skylights that the sunlight warms it up as well. But here's a question for you. Do you know in a few recent podcasts I've been saying, I'll ask you a question, and if you get the answer right, you'll get $1 million or 10 million quid?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to do another one of those, but I'm a bit wary that eventually you will get one of these right. But for now, I'll give you 100 million quid if you can tell me which country the world's largest mall is, according to Wikipedia.
Okay.
Eritrea.
No.
Mexico.
No, unlucky lads.
Ah.
That goes into the pot for the next episode. It's the Iran Mall in Tehran. The largest mall in the world.
That's really good. Yeah. Is it just very...
It's just big. It's got hotels. It's got lots of... It's just got all sorts of stuff in there.
It's a big mall.
It's a big mall. It's a
big old mall.
Very nice. I've got another fact.
Go for it.
From Susanna Pate of British Carrots.
Okay.
This came in a little while ago.
Sorry, you say plate of carrots?
Sorry. Pate.
Oh. Of?
British Carrots.
Oh. Okay.
Her name is Susanna Pate, and she works for, I don't need to tell you guys who British Carrots are, but they're...
But just, you know, for the international listener.
They're a trade body whose main job is to get us all eating more carrots.
Right.
It's a hugely powerful organisation. Shadowy, I would say.
Yeah.
And she wrote because British Carrot Day was coming up.
Okay.
It was on the 3rd of October, so we have missed it by quite some way. But I didn't want to leave her out because...
Because of us.
I love it. You know, I love a carrot.
Absolutely.
Isn't it strange that National Carrot Day is in October when presumably all the carrots have been well farmed by then?
James, I'd like to refer you to Susanna's email.
Okay.
Carrots are harvested 12 months of the year in the UK.
Give me a break.
So they're one of the freshest and most versatile vegetables we can all enjoy. That's according to Harry Strawson, who I presume grows carrots. Anyway, I thought a couple of just little quiz questions based off her facts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
How many carrot seeds are sown in Britain each year?
How many
carrot seeds each year?
If I get within 10 billion of this, I'll be astonished.
Okay.
I'm going to say 50 billion.
Okay.
Oh, I'm glad you're that high, because I was going higher. I was going to say 200 billion.
Well, it's 22 billion. So Dan is out by a factor of 10.
James
got reasonably close.
I mean, I didn't get close.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme of things.
No, if they did plant 50 billion, we'd have an insane overcapacity of carrots. It's not a world I want to live in. Walk along the street just wading through carrots as you go to the office every day. All right. What is the total tonnage of carrots that those 22 billion seeds between them produce? So how many tons of carrots are we talking? 22 billion seeds, but how many tons of carrots?
Oh, I hate this quiz.
It's a bad quiz.
I watched Richard Osman's House of Games for the first ever time this week. No offense, Andy, because you were on it and I didn't watch it when you were on it.
Don't worry.
They do this stuff, don't they, where you have to just make a random guess on things.
Yeah. Mm. This is worse than House of Games. I'm not afraid to admit that.
Okay. All right, I'll go first. You went first last time.
Okay.
Six.
Come on. Play the game, mate.
I'm going to go 100 billion.
100 billion?
You think that every carrot seed produces 5 tons of carrot?
This is why you got invited on House of Games and I didn't. Yeah, that's a good point.
But this is good because now we're a tie.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're both. I'll guess 700,000 tons, which is the correct answer.
Oh, okay. Well done. Okay.
And just out of interest, that would stretch 1.4 million miles if you put the carrots end to end.
Great.
Okay, carry on. Next fact.
Thank you, Miss Plate.
Pate.
Only two questions in this quiz.
Okay, one last question. What?
1.9 million miles.
Percentage.
Oh, yeah.
Of the carrots consumers buy in the UK are grown in Britain.
38.
You think? Okay, 38. We're only 38% self-sufficient in carrots. Yeah. Okay.
Ah, interesting. You said the word only there. 39.
Oh, James wins. It's 97.
That's good.
I know. So there's almost no need to buy imported carrots. Almost.
Mm.
So that's thank you, Susanna.
Very good.
And if you work for like the Wool Board or whatever, podcast@qi.com.
The Cheese Board, they're always doing stuff, aren't they?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And we'll forward this up to Richard Osman. You should have a new job very soon.
Tony Shane writes about a bond, so a financial bond.
Yeah.
You know, you buy a bond and it pays out a certain rate of interest for a certain number of years, right? Mm-hmm. And then when the bond matures, you get all the original money you put in back.
Yeah.
So I pay 100 quid, I get 3 quid a year for 10 years, and then I get 100 quid back. Pretty good deal. And it's if companies or governments need to raise a lot of money initially and fund something
big.
Wartime
bonds.
Well, there is a bond which was issued in 1648... which is still paying out.
Oh, yeah.
It was issued in the Netherlands 377 years ago. Charles I was still alive in England. And it was the Water Authority. They issued a bond. And it's still paying.
You said, like you knew this already.
I feel like we may have covered this a very long time ago on the show.
I'm not familiar with it.
It's just stunning. So the actual original bond is in Yale now. It's passed through many hands over the centuries. It's written on goatskin. It's so old. And the Water Board in the Netherlands just needed to raise money for something. And this isn't even the oldest bond in the world that's still active. There is one that was issued in 1624. It had its 400th birthday last year. It is still paying out.
Wow.
And it was again Dutch water utility. They had this disaster where some drifting ice broke through a dike. Huge problem in the Netherlands because it's all underwater. They needed to raise money, and this one pays about 13 euros still every year that you're the bondholder.
Wow.
It's just so cool.
Yeah.
I think I should set one up so people can send me money and I can become a spy or something.
Wait, are you issuing the bond?
Yeah, it'll be called the James Bond.
Oh my God. Nice. Oh my God.
I gave you a second to notice what you were walking
spy
into.
Yeah.
Of course.
All right. Well, I actually did prepare a separate little quiz. Who was the oldest Bond?
Oh.
As in James Bond?
James Bond. Bond James Bond. The oldest actor to play James Bond.
Roger Moore.
Correct.
Oh.
Second oldest?
Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig, correct. Carry on.
Come on. What is this quiz?
And sometimes they're not all impossible. It's not all like how many carrot seeds are there in the UK every year. Sometimes it's just a little confidence builder. So Roger Moore was 57 when he hung up his false teeth and wig and all of that.
Yeah.
But Daniel Craig was 51 when he stopped doing it.
Yeah.
Mm.
In that last
Bond
film. I'm
not massively surprised. What about Lazenby for number 3?
I haven't written down any other...
Oh.
Connery?
I haven't written down any other names in ages. Should have done.
You probably didn't think we were going to get the first two so quickly, I guess.
I gotta say, I didn't. Mm. Lazenby, George Lazenby.
Yeah.
Someone painted my old flat years and years ago who had come. Did I told you this before?
No.
Andy, this would be the best anecdote you've ever told us. I'm sure we would remember it.
Wait. This could tail off really quickly.
Lazenby's dead now, isn't he? He's died.
I don't think he is.
Oh, I better not say it then.
Wait, let me see.
Listener, imagine this anecdote begins. A friend of mine was painting a flat and ends with something that's libelous against George Lazenby.
He's very much going strong.
Let's move on.
Yeah. I told you it was going to tail off. I told you. We trusted you. You had such a... front-loaded it so well. He supposedly got the gig of Bond when he was sitting having his hair done. This is one of the stories that gets told. And one of the Broccolis was sitting next to him. Big Broccoli was sitting next.
Gubby Broccoli, the producer.
Gubby Broccoli.
Or Barbara.
Or Barbara. It could have been Barbara.
Yeah. And Lazenby shot him 6 times through the head, didn't he?
Yes.
Like, you've got what it takes, kid.
Yeah. He's also... Do you remember that there was going to be a Bond of a very different nature, a different kind of character, not strictly an actor, and he wasn't allowed to be Bond in the end because his face looked a bit too much like a farmer's? We've spoken about this on the podcast. It might have been part of an edit.
Someone's... Brian Blessed?
No.
You look too much like a... Who looks like a farmer?
Interestingly, a book of theirs is right behind me, but...
You're sitting in front of 500 books.
Wait a minute, I know. Ann Miller.
It is Ranulph Fiennes. Ranulph Fiennes went to auditions and was
in the running.
Yeah. I think it was either his hands looked like a farmer or his face. One of the two.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook, you know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
I've got one, Andrew Price. I'm a long-term listener living in North Carolina, USA, where I work as a nurse. I'm sending you an article I found in the New York Times about a type of seabird, the streaked shearwater, and the article is headlined, "These Majestic Seabirds Never Stop Pooping." And basically, scientists did an experiment on the streaked shearwater, where they put cameras on the bottoms of the birds pointing backwards. And I think they were trying to work out something about their flight or their flight dynamics or something. But basically what they found is, these birds are constantly pooing. It's extraordinary. It's 5% of their mass every hour.
Whoa.
I know. And Andrew writes, to put this into perspective, this would be like me pooping out an 11-pound poop, I don't like the word poop, every hour, about the same weight as a normal house cat, or 132 pounds, the weight of 2 Dalmatians in the course of a 12-hour workday.
Wow. 50 and a half days and you have 101 Dalmatians. That's amazing.
That's
very
cool.
Upsetting. What a bird.
What a bird.
Thank you, Andrew. Great fact.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
One more, Dan?
Yeah, I got actually another poo one to read out here. This was sent in by Liz May. And she says that, this is an article she spotted, a woman in Australia has now been in a years-long remission from severe bipolar disorder after receiving homemade fecal transplant enemas from her husband.
Oh boy.
Her case is one of the first in the world and may lead to improved treatments for bipolar disorder.
I don't think it will. I just... homemade... I don't even know how you would... how you would think of homemaking a fecal transplant enema.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It just wouldn't occur to me to do.
No.
Which bit?
Homemaking, I suppose. Like, if I went to the doctor and he said, look, it sounds crazy, but actually we think your microbiome might be maladjusted and we think maybe we can get it back into equilibrium by doing this procedure. But I don't think they would then say, can you just go home and ask your...
But would you rather have someone else's poo up there or would you rather have someone you know?
I think someone else's.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Very trusting.
Yeah, but that's because I have to keep... If it's someone close to you, like a partner... You have to look at them. I think it takes a little of the spark out of a marriage.
I'm wondering the circumstances in which you raise your idea, you know.
Yeah. Oh, you've got to build up to it. That's baby steps. You can't just go straight in and say, I think we should do this. You've got to be like, I wonder.
I heard the Joneses at number 14 are doing quite an interesting thing. I'm not saying we should do it. I just, you know, it's something that kind of interests me a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we could try. We could try it.
For your birthday, maybe.
Great fact.
Well, great that it worked as well.
Yeah.
Miranda Coates writes, according to the Royal Shakespeare Company, 50% of the world's children study Shakespeare.
Wow.
That's nice, isn't it?
That's great. I gotta say,
it's good for Britain because it gives us soft power around the world.
Soft power, yeah. And all the plays are bloody good. They're really good. Shakespeare's one of those writers who everyone says he's good, and then you read him, and actually he's really good.
Can't believe you're telling. Tell us more about this Shakespeare guy, Andy.
Shut up.
Good on
it. Well, early adopter, as usual.
The guy who decorated my flat had a really interesting story about Bill.
He is
Shakespeare.
Dead. I can say that much.
Oh well, he said he was a wanker.
So this was a study done in 2014. Okay, and it also named Shakespeare as the most popular person associated with UK art and culture in the world. Can you name any other people who were on that list? And I have a list of 13 other people.
Charles Dickens.
Nope.
These are just of any kind, any field.
Anyone in the world associates them with UK art and culture.
George Orwell.
Nope.
John Lennon. The Beatles.
The Beatles.
Jane Austen.
Nope.
Oh my God.
Dan's way more likely to get these.
Okay.
David Bowie.
No, but good guess.
Edmund Hillary.
No.
Brian Blessed.
Edmund Hillary's from New Zealand.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Dan's way more likely to get this. So we're thinking obscure.
John Cleese.
John Cleese, no.
Freddie Mercury.
No. God, I genuinely thought you'd get a few more of these.
The Queen.
The Queen, yeah.
Yeah.
Queen.
UK culture.
Well, culture.
She loved horse racing. I'm sorry to be snobby, but she just didn't. Do you mean the old queen?
Queen Elizabeth II.
Yeah, the true queen. Yeah, yeah, go on. Yeah. Okay, so we had the queen, we had Shakespeare.
We've had the Beatles.
There are 10 more to go.
I'll give you McCartney as well because you said the Beatles.
Twiggy.
No.
Twiggy.
Sting.
2014.
No such thing as a fish.
They've got Anna Tsinsky, so I'll give you that. No, not that.
2014, that's a clue, 2014.
Ed Sheeran.
Similar, on
Lily
the right
Allen.
Track. No.
Dapper Laughs.
More famous than Lily Allen, for sure.
N-dubs.
Bernard Manning.
Adele is what I was saying before there. An author.
Philip Pullman.
Terry Pratchett.
Come on, guys. The most famous British author.
J.K. Rowling.
Yes. A soccer player.
Beckham.
Oh, correct. Man, right. An actor.
Alan Rickman.
No.
Ralph Fiennes.
No.
Simon Callow.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Okay, yeah.
And a puppet dog that sells car insurance.
Winston Churchill.
Churchill. It just says Churchill. I assume it's that.
It's not called Winston.
Good quiz, guys.
Great really quiz. Good quiz.
Well done.
Wow. How really the hell good did quiz. Churchill make it onto the dog? The dog over the politician.
It will be Winston Churchill, I'm sure.
Oh, okay.
I was just doing a funny.
Let's go compare meerkats. They on there?
Anyway, join us next week for my quiz, Pulling Teeth. Only on Channel 5. Okay, well, I think we... Oh, it's not... I'm not even hosting this, am I?
Who is hosting this one? Andy.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't you think we should maybe end and maybe do some curatorship?
No, I want to do 20 more minutes of these of the UK culture and art figures. Yes, you're right, James. We should wrap this up. Thank you so much for sending your facts in. Just a reminder, podcast@qi.com if you'd like to have your fact.
Oh, I don't think I did that last week. So just to say that also last week, if you want to send a fact last week, then it's podcast@qi.com.
That explains the dearth of facts we've had in the inbox since last week. No, thank you so much for listening to this bit. And now let's have some fact custodian award ceremonies. This, this is a thing we're doing where if you join Club Fish on Patreon at the Friend of the Podcast tier, if you join at those exalted heights, you get a headline fact that we've done on the show in the past to be yours, your fact, in perpetuity, forever and ever. Amen. It is your fact. So we're going to be dishing out a few of those now to a few friends of the podcast who've joined. So let's start with one. Anyone want to kick off?
I'll do one.
Lovely.
Because this was originally my fact from episode 9, and it is that it was fashionable in New York at the end of the 19th century for women to wear bird of paradise feathers. And that fact is now under the custodianship of, drumroll please, David Addis.
Congratulations, David.
Well done, David. I actually have no memory of that fact whatsoever.
You need to go back and listen to episode 9.
I'm gonna do.
This is exciting for all of us to revisit old episodes.
And that was the thing that kicked off bird protection, wasn't it? As in, people were just wearing these bird feathers willy-nilly. And
is
then people thought,
right?
Well, these birds, there aren't as many birds of paradise as there used to be. There are a lot of lovely hats being made.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
And I think that is what happened. It was the Audubon Society, wasn't it?
Oh.
I think, if memory serves.
Yeah.
Don't write in if it wasn't.
There was a thing called the Plumage League,
yeah,
which is just a flat-out good name for a society.
That's a great name, yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice.
But yeah, congratulations to you, David.
Lovely stuff. Should I read one out?
Yeah.
This was my fact from episode 9. Alan Turing lost his buried treasure when he couldn't crack his own code.
What an idiot.
Oh, what a story. This is now under the custodianship of Martin Hill. Congratulations, Martin. And this was Alan Turing in the lead up to World War II, worried that all of his valuables were going to be stolen. So I think he traded it in for a couple of silver bars or gold bars.
Oh, yeah.
And he buried them, and he made a code of where he buried them, and he made a code of a code, mm-hmm, and then possibly even a code of a code of a code. And then after the war,
he loved his codes.
He's big on codes. It's one thing that we will say about Alan Turing, is he loved a code, or he loved to crack a code.
Oh, yeah.
And unfortunately, in this case, when he went back after the war to crack it, the landscape had changed. He couldn't quite understand his actual code itself.
Oh,
and
no.
So he never found it. It might still be out there. I think the bit of England where he was meant to have buried it is now a sort of council estate. So I think they would have dug it
is
up.
Is it
possibly
near Bletchley?
Somewhere. Can't remember, to be honest, but
I
yeah.
I thought it was.
Oh, yeah. If you live anywhere in the Midlands, why not dig up your garden?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's good for you anyway.
Oh, yeah. Gardening.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, congrats, Martin Hill. That's yours.
Here's one. This is going out to Aaron Hung, and it's the fact that in 2011, the largest sperm bank in the world stopped accepting sperm from redheads.
Sorry, Aaron. You got a bit of a lewd one.
It's a blue fact. There's no doubt about that. And I think it was
classic just, Anna, really.
It's an Anna fact,
it's
yeah.
It's an Anna fact, of course it was. I think it was a lack of demand. I think it was classic anti-redhead prejudice.
That is prejudice.
Yeah.
There's an interesting thing in history. I read a paper about this, that people have typically thought that people with red hair are very sort of sexually active, and they've had
what?
That reputation throughout history.
Oh, yeah.
But the researchers found out that the reason that they had that reputation is because people just generally found them more attractive.
Oh, right.
And so they were having more sex, but it's just because everyone fancied them.
Yeah, right.
Oh, that's a nice counter-narrative to all the anti-ginger prejudice.
Absolutely.
Mm. Good.
Wesley Vetter, you are now the proud custodian of this fact. The English language has more words borrowed from Hawaiian than from Welsh.
Really?
Yes. Wesley, that one is now yours. This was an Andrew Murray original.
Yeah. And it's, I can't remember any words that are borrowed from Hawaiian now. Aloha.
Wiki. Hula.
Hula. As in hula hoop.
Yeah. Hula dancing.
Yes.
But also I think the thing is that in Hawaii, they had lots of new plants that needed names. So we took them from Hawaiian.
Right.
Whereas when we went into Wales, they had the same plants as we had, which is slightly like maybe leek. No, we already had leeks.
Daffs?
Daffs, yeah, they still existed. So, you know, there was no need to give Welsh names to these things.
You're right. And also, let's not forget the anti-Welsh prejudice.
Of course. Which, yeah. But one interesting thing is that everyone found the Welsh extremely attractive.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do another one.
Yeah.
This we had a guest on in this episode, episode 10, and that guest was Eric Lamper.
Eric Lamper, I haven't seen him for years.
He's... Well, do you know what? You can see him currently in a movie. So there's a new...
That's why I haven't seen him, because he's way more successful than me.
So there's a movie out at the moment called Grief is the Thing with Feathers, based on a Max Porter book, and it's Benedict Cumberbatch. And there's a big black bird that appears in it.
Is he playing the bird?
He's inside the bird.
Wow.
Wow.
So you don't see Eric, but he's on stilts and he is the bird in that film.
Very cool. Something we to grow love about. Eric.
Yeah.
What was his fact?
His fact was, in 1923, jockey Frank Hayes won a race in Belmont Park in New York, despite being dead.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing fact. That's for Emma Govan, and congratulations. This is now your fact. This was, he died on the final leg, didn't he? I think he had a heart attack while on the horse.
Right.
But the horse just kept running and won the race.
Right.
Yeah.
Gosh, wow. That's amazing. Have we got time for any more, Andy, or?
I think we've got time for three more.
Three more. Okay, well, I'll do one. This one was a Dan Schreiber fact from episode 10. Have no such thing as a fish. And Dan said, some Buddhist monks run marathons to achieve enlightenment. And that fact now belongs to Mr. Dan Turner.
Lovely.
So Dan, congratulations.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite earliest facts on the podcast. It's just this extraordinary thing that they run these insanely long marathons. Mm. And the idea is that after however many days of doing it, they would achieve enlightenment. So rather than meditating your way to it, you can actually bolt.
But the thing is about meditating is you can just sit there.
Right.
I think I would prefer to do that method of enlightenment than the, you know, having to get your gym gear on.
Rub your nipples with Vaseline. I mean, I'll be doing that even if I'm just sitting down. So that's sort of, that's a wash for me.
That's sort of, accidentally achieving enlightenment.
Absolutely, yeah. Runners do that, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Oh, they do, do they?
Yeah.
I thought we were just getting an insight into your life, Andy. Okay. That's the thing.
Otherwise, you get jogger's nipple.
Yeah.
Which can be very painful, actually.
Oh, it sounds bad. I've never run far enough to get jogger's nipple.
I've had it.
Have you?
Did you butter them or?
No, I just suffered for the next couple of days.
Sensitive. Yeah.
We should move on.
More
all
facts.
Right, let's have a couple more. This one goes out to Ben Caligari. Congratulations, Ben, because you're getting an absolute slammer. Is that the Slovakian and Slovenian embassies in Washington meet once a month to exchange wrongly addressed mail?
Brilliant.
Yep.
Again, an early classic. Yeah. I feel like that was one of the poster facts in our early days.
It was. Slovakia, Slovenia.
Yeah.
They're not very close. They're close in a global sense, but they're not.
Not in a European sense.
No.
Yeah, not in a European sense. They're not very close.
They're probably close in an embassy sense.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe.
They're all in alphabetical order, those embassies in Washington. It's awful when the guy from Afghanistan has to go and visit the guy from Zimbabwe.
But that's just a great fact.
And do we have time for one more?
Yeah.
Let's do it. This one is going out to Alan Clark. In the 18th century, there were genuine medicines called Allen's Nipple Liniment, for those joggers out there, Grimston's Eye Snuff, Miller's Worm Plums, and Italian Bosom Friend. This was your fact, Andy.
I remember that. That was a great fact to find. I can't remember how I found it now, but Miller's Worm Plums is such a such a dodgy sounding.
It's like they put... Miller is a very nice word, like our colleague Ann Miller.
Yeah.
But worm and plums are two of the worst words you could hear from a doctor.
if they're in the same sentence, you've got plum worms. That's really bad. I think it just meant that's the unit of medicine, like a lozenge. It's just a little plum that you have to take to deal with your worms. It's almost as if they've surrounded the unpleasant word worm with Miller and plums, which are, you know, I don't mind a plum.
No.
I love a plum, actually.
Do you?
Yes, I cook. It doesn't matter. We can move on, but I cook it. I cook a rather nice plum and oat slice, which I'm sure I've brought into the office for you guys in the past. No?
Don't think so.
Next week.
Chocolate sausage is the last thing I had from you.
Okay, we can't get back into that.
Okay, so time to finish, Andy?
I think so. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to Little Fish. We'll be back in another week with another one, with more of our facts, with more of your facts. If you'd like to get in contact with any of us, just email podcast@qi.com or track us all down on social media. That's it for now. See you next week. Bye.